I'd like to call the meeting to order of the Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance Committee. They have lengthened our name, so I don't think there's an acronym that we can use for that, but that's the name of our committee, and I'm glad that you're here today as we start this new session. And I'm not sure how many of you chose this committee or assigned to this committee. But I'm glad you're here, and I think the only reason I mention that is that you will find it's probably the best committee that you'll serve on this session. So we're not exactly, what you say, shy in saying that. So we're going to start with introductions, and I think we will do that by simply starting over here to my left. Gene, would you like to tell us who you are, where you're from?
Thank you.
Cats, dogs, anything you want to throw in, and any priorities that you have dealing with higher education, if you have any thoughts.
All right.
With a limited time.
Limited time. Well, we have an hour and a half, so yes. I can squeeze it in maybe. Now, Representative Gene Pawlowski, I represent primarily Winona County, City Winona, Lewiston, Homer. I have been on this committee for a number of years, chaired it in 97, 98, when we put in a record amount of money investing it in higher ed, and in 2013 and 14, and we put in another record amount and froze tuition and also addressed some concerns in administration and administrative bonuses, and I'm hoping that we can continue down that path in 17 and 18, Mr. Chair. Enjoy working with you, and I like your new Victrola record.
Now everybody's going to want to come and see it.
I know. It's very nice.
Bring your own record, by the way. Okay, next.
Representative Barb Haley, I represent District 21A, which is Red Wing, Lake City, Cannon Falls, that part of the state. Very pleased to be here on higher ed. I've spent some time in education. I worked for an educational initiative called Every Hand Joined, which is part of the Educational Partnership Coalition now. So very passionate about this work and have a particular interest in making sure students are career ready. I was working on a workforce initiative connecting our Minnesota Southeast Technical College with our high school and our manufacturing community over the past number of years. So I think with our generational trends, we're really going to have a challenge to fill the job pipeline, and would be very interested in the ideas that we might have to work on that. Thank you.
Chair, my name is Dario Anselmo. I represent District 49A, which is basically the city of Edina and some surrounding school districts in there. We have a number of University of Minnesota graduates, alumni, and even students in Edina, so I know I'll be hearing from them, and it's really a lot of the other institutions in our state. Normandale is another area that serves our community, so I'm looking forward to being a part of the committee and helping.
Okay, thanks.
Chair in Arms, my name is Randy Jessup, and I am from District 42A, which is Moundsview, Arden Hills, and Shoreview. And I'm very much looking forward to being on this committee. I am a former graduate of the University of Minnesota with an undergrad as well as a master's. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
Chair, committee members, my name is Ilhan Omar. I represent part of Minneapolis. I have the U of M Augsburg within the parameters of my district. Higher ed and student job readiness is a priority issues of mine, and I also am, I think, the only Minneapolis legislator on here, and we have a number of higher ed institutions, and would love to hear all of the possibilities of supporting these institutions and the young people that go there.
Thank you.
I'm Jen Schultz, and I represent Duluth, and the University of Minnesota Duluth is in my district. I am also a professor of economics at UMD, and I served on the budget committee and realized how complicated and complex the budget is of the University of Minnesota system, and I'm here to make sure that the state fully funds institutions of higher ed and public institutions, and that we try to do something to address student debt and the expense of higher education.
I was also a graduate of UMD. I've been there a few times.
Nice.
Connie?
Hello, my name is Connie Bernardi, and I represent the communities of Fridley, New Brighton, and Spring Lake Park.
I'm a product of our public schools here in Minnesota, including college, and as well as my children and our my husband. So thank you for letting me on this committee again. I enjoy serving on it.
Welcome back. I'm glad to see you back.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Nick Serwas, third-term member, first time on the committee, looking forward to learning a lot.
Mr. Chair, at the behest of one of your assistants that was requested that I be on this committee, and I'm looking forward to it. I tend to be the Joe Friday with the green eye shade, so it's all about the numbers for me, so I look forward to delving into budgets, not cursory, but getting off into the weeds and making sure they make sense for the benefit of the students that use our institutions. So thank you very much.
When I think of weeds, I think of mowing the lawn, but we're going to handle it.
We're going to be mowing. We're going to be mowing a lot of grass, Mr. Chair.
That's good. That's good. Tony will be the vice chair of this committee.
Tony, I think the new phrase is take a deep dive into the budget.
I misquote. We have the chair over the vice chair over there. Tony is the vice chair.
Oh yeah, true. That's fun.
Okay. I think you're next, by the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Drew from Savage, and I think Tony really has a better face for sitting over there, so they let him have it, this one. I'm really excited to, like Tony said, actually delve into the numbers, get really deep into the budgets, and see what Minnesota's tax dollars are going towards, and make sure they're being used for the best, most efficient way that they possibly could be.
Josh Heinzman, I represent part of Crow Wing County, House District 10A. This is my second term on this committee. And while visiting with constituents, I think that it's probably not unusual for folks in my part of the state to expect that we not just fully fund everything, that we're not a rubber stamp, but that we would delve in very closely, as Representative Christensen was mentioning, and to look for a cost benefit in everything that we possibly can, and find ways to improve education.
Brian Daniels, I represent District 24B. That'd be Faribault, Moorestown, Medford, and all the way down to Ellendale and Claremont. My second time serving on the higher ed, and it's been a pleasure the first round, and I'm sure it'll be a good time this time. I can echo the same things that Mr. Heinzman and Mr. Christensen echoed on the numbers. We have to make sure that we're investing our dollars wisely. I've got four adult children. They all graduated college, three with a four-year college and one with a two-year technical degree. The four-year college students have an average debt when they graduated about over $60,000. So I'm very much in tune to maybe see if we can do something about the curing debt. Maybe it's get some of the kids started earlier into the high school where they can take a couple of credits there, take a little deeper into that program. But just make sure we get the most dollars for our kids available and that's used wisely. Thank you.
I'm Lori Pryor. I represent Minnetonka and Eden Prairie, first-time legislator, so first time on my committee here. But I'm very happy that I was given this placement, this honor of joining you here. I know that when I'm out in my district, people are talking about education, and they are talking about all levels of education, from pre-K to college and post-secondary and graduate. And so one of my concerns also is the medical school and to make sure that we're supporting having a top-notch medical school here in Minnesota, that's the public medical school, and that, that all of our career readiness for all of the occupations that we're going to have, that we are thinking ahead and training for that. And college debt does come up, so yes, that's one of my issues too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Ben Lean. I'm a third-term member, of the Higher Ed Committee, too. I represent District 4A, which is largely the city of Moorhead. I do have one township north of Moorhead. And within my district, I have the whole gamut of higher ed. I've got the four-year public Minnesota State, the two-year Minnesota State, private for-profit, private nonprofit. So looking forward to continuing to work for students, faculty, staff, and making sure that we have the best systems possible for people in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Abigail Whelan. I represent Anoka and Ramsey, and I've served on the Higher Education Committee last term. This is my second term. I feel like there's not much for me to add to what my colleagues have already said, looking forward to delving into the issues that we're faced with and having some really good conversations.
All right, then staff, I think, probably next. Megan, you want to start?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Megan Hennon, and I'm the committee legislative assistant.
Kaylee.
Mr. Chair, members, Kaylee Tate, the committee administrator.
And then research staff, I guess, next.
Hi, I'm Nancy Conley with DFL Research.
I'm Warren Sweeney with GOP Research.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Nathan Hopkins with Nonpartisan House Research.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members, I'm Sean Williams with Nonpartisan House Research.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Ken Savory with Nonpartisan Fiscal Analysis.
All right, and then we have a page. We just have one page. So a single page, would you introduce yourself?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Joe Stevenson.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. From where?
Originally from Austin, Minnesota.
Good. We miss anybody? Okay, thank you for that, and it was brief. That's good. I would just say two things. The static is something we had last session, and apparently hasn't been fixed yet, so you'll have to just bear with that. Some blame it on cell phones. I'm not sure that's true or not, but so now that I mentioned it, maybe we'll come back. And also, for the new members, it would help me. We have the name tags and the name places, and as we get into this, just to help me make sure I don't mispronounce or miss a name, I just like that little, it's like a teleprompter, which I could use sometimes too. Okay, we now have in your packet, just wanted to mention, we have the committee rules, which are basically the same as we've had before with one small change suggested to us by Representative Pawlowski. Would you like to just mention what it is? We'll just have people write it in. We don't vote on it, but we do have to at least get people to.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. On number 8, in the third sentence, after the word be, insert, and this would be a quote, posted to the committee website by 5 p.m. on the day the amendment is due, and this would to ensure that everybody, including those folks in greater Minnesota, would be able to see what's being posted and what's being dealt with, and it would just be on the website. I know that you've got crack staff, and they're going to do it anyway, but just in case.
So the 24-hour rule basically means that Kaylee needs it
right
within that 24-hour period.
But, Mr. Chair, people do look at the website. They do want to know what's coming, and particularly if anyone's going to make a trip up here, it is nice to know what's right. Being dealt with.
Anyone have any questions on that little change? If not, we'll move right to our presentation. And I'm not sure who's going to start, but somebody will.
Mr. Chair and members, Ken Savory again from Nonpartisan House Fiscal Analysis. Just to give a little intro about what my office does, we typically take care of work with House Research on appropriations drafting, anything involving the state budget, spreadsheets, as we'll see as we move through the session. I'll just turn over to my colleagues to introduce themselves as well.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I'm Sean Williams with House Research. Just a little bit of background on our office. Our office can be a resource for you for doing background research on policy and bill development. We can help you draft bills, and we also staff committees, as you can see.
Mr. Chair and members, again, for the record, my name is Nathan Hopkins, also from House Research. And so walk us through our agenda for this presentation today. First, we're going to talk a little bit about governance and legislative oversight. I'll speak about governance and legislative oversight for the state's two main educational systems, higher educational systems, the University of Minnesota and MNSCU.
Sean Williams will then talk a little bit about oversight of the Office of Higher Education. Ken Savory will talk about legislative finance and budget issues, and then Mr. Williams will walk us through some recent data and trends related to higher education. So first, governance and legislative oversight. We'll start with the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota, I'm sure many of you are already familiar with it, is a land-grant public research university. Its land-grant status requires it to be focused on certain missions. It began in 1851, and under the Morrill Act of 1862, which was signed by Abraham Lincoln, land-grant universities have a specific object. The language from the actual statute is that the leading object shall be, without excluding other scientific and classical studies and including military tactics, to teach such branches of learning as are related to agriculture and the mechanical arts in such manner as the legislatures of the states may respectively prescribe in order to promote the liberal and practical education of the industrial classes in the several pursuits and professions in life. And as we all know, the university now has expanded to become one of the state's leading research institution. It has five major campuses statewide in the Twin Cities, Duluth, Morris, Crookston, and Rochester, as well as numerous agricultural extension research facilities and outreach centers. Fall 2016 enrollment numbers were 67,480. That's combined undergraduate and graduate enrollment across all the campuses. And 51,580 is the number for just the Twin Cities campuses. The university actually precedes Minnesota statehood. The university charter began in 1851, and it was recognized by the state constitution in 1858. And this leads to something that's called constitutional autonomy for the University of Minnesota. It means that the university has autonomy to manage its own internal affairs. This issue comes up a lot. Legislators are also often curious about it. One way that it manifests itself is in what are seen in bills as requests to the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota to do certain things because they have autonomy in terms of internal management of the university. Nevertheless, the legislature's general lawmaking power applies to the University of Minnesota, and the legislature can place conditions on appropriations to the university as long as those don't violate university autonomy. A 12-member Board of Regents sets university policy. There's a 6-year staggered term for the Board of Regents. One regent is from each U.S. congressional district, and there are 4 at-large regents, including one university student. Talk a little bit about the regent election process. The legislature elects members for the Board of Regents, and 4 seats are due for election this year, in 2017. There's a 3-step process for the election of regents. It's currently ongoing. The first step takes place at the Regent Candidate Advisory Council, or RCAC. The RCAC screens candidates and submits non-binding recommendations to the legislature for regents. Just yesterday, RCAC made its recommendations to the Joint Legislative Council. The Joint Legislative Council is the second in the 3 phases of the region election process. They meet jointly to review candidates, those that are submitted by the RCAC. They can also consider other candidates as well. The Joint Legislative Committee meets no later than February 28th. Finally, there's a Joint Legislative Convention. Members of both the House and the Senate meet to actually elect the regents. A majority vote of the convention is required for election, and that convention usually occurs in early March, so we can have that to look forward to this year.
Anyone have any questions? If you do, just raise your hand.
A few legislative policy changes from the last biennium. This is just a selection of items that sort of shows the scope of areas that this committee works in for the University of Minnesota. $15 million was appropriated in funds in order to increase the ranking of the university's medical school. Funds were appropriated specifically to the university's mobile dental clinic. The legislature directed the Ombudsman for Mental Health to monitor clinical drug trials at the university's Department of Psychiatry. They appropriated funds to design a collegiate recovery program for addicted behaviors on the Rochester campus. That's an on-campus addiction recovery program. Finally, this is in an area that's called performance-based funding. 5% of the financial year 2017 operations for the university were tied to certain performance goals. Those included increasing graduation rates for students of color, increasing STEM degrees, reallocation of administrative costs, and more. Moving on to Minnesota State. You'll often hear people refer to Minnesota State as MinSCU, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'll probably refer to it that way, but Minnesota State is the preferred nomenclature now. This is a system of consolidated public universities, community colleges, and technical colleges across the state of Minnesota. It was established by law in 1991 and finally implemented in 1995, and that implementation involved the consolidation of all those different institutions. This is the fifth largest system of public colleges and universities in the country. It has 54 campus locations, 7 four-year universities, and 30 colleges. There is a total of 254,206 credit-seeking students as of fall 2016. The system also has stewardship over 28 million square feet of space, which accounts for one-third of the total square footage of Minnesota's public buildings. Moving on to system governance, we spoke a little bit about the Board of Regents for the University of Minnesota. For Minnesota State, there's a 15-member Board of Trustees that sets system policy. System governance is provided for in Chapter 136F of the Minnesota Statutes. Trustees serve 6-year staggered terms. There are also students on the Board of Trustees, and they serve 2-year terms. There's one trustee per congressional district, 3 students, one of whom comes from a community college, one of whom comes from a state university, and one of whom comes from a technical college. There's also one designated member representing labor. Unlike regents for the University of Minnesota, which are elected by the legislature, trustees are appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. There is a trustee candidate advisory council, which screens candidates and submits non-binding recommendations to the governor. And that organization, the trustee candidate advisory council, has appointees from both the House and the Senate. The Minnesota AFL-CIO screens candidates and submits a non-binding recommendation to the governor for the labor-designated seat. And the University and College Student Association screens candidates and submits its non-binding recommendations to the governor for the student seats on the Board of Trustees. And some important legislative policy changes for Minnesota State in the last biennium. Again, as with the University of Minnesota slide, this is just a small sampling of the things that the legislature did in the last biennium. They established an occupational scholarship program. It was a pilot program offering scholarships for 2-year colleges for credentials in high-demand occupations. There's also a required mentoring component to that scholarship program. The legislature addressed the issue of remedial classes. It prohibited MinSCU from requiring remedial courses if a student received a college-ready ACT or SAT score. It also provided a plan for helping students with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It required MinSCU to begin development of a plan for a program that would help students with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It would offer a 2-year full-time residential college experience for those students. The legislature also addressed transfer pathways in order to help assist people as they transition from a 2-year associate's degree to a 4-year baccalaureate institution. And as with the University of Minnesota, performance-based funding was also put in place for Minnesota State. 5% of the 2017 operations and maintenance appropriation for Minnesota State was tied to performance goals.
We have now, a quick question if we can just stop for just a minute. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have the information in front of you about the amount of money that was funded for the occupational scholarship program?
Representative Schultz, Mr. Chair, no, I don't have that information in front of me, but I'd be happy to get it for you.
Thank you.
I believe Mr. Savory might have that information.
Mr. Hopkins, could you just continue with the presentation? I'll be able to find it in a moment.
I will now hand the mic over to Mr. Williams. We'll talk a little bit about the Office of Higher Education.
Mr. Williams, welcome again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Office of Higher Education is a cabinet-level state agency. The Commissioner of Higher Education is appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. The Office of Higher Education also has a 6-member student advisory council that advises and makes recommendations to the office on issues of concern. There's representation from all types of institutions in the state on the Student Advisory Council. The Office of Higher Education has a number of administrative responsibilities. They administer state-based financial aid, grant programs, and loan forgiveness programs, as well as some federal aid programs. Some examples of the financial aid programs they administer are the state grant program, the self-loan program, which is a lending program that the agency operates, the self-refi program, which is a refinancing program that was started last year by the Office of Higher Education, and there's a number of other grants and scholarship programs for that are more focused on particular populations. The Office of Higher Education also administers tuition reciprocity agreements with North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, the Canadian province of Manitoba, and one community college, Iowa Lakes Community College in Iowa. That those reciprocity agreements essentially treat students as residents for the purposes of tuition, so students from Minnesota can attend schools and receive resident tuition rates, and likewise students from those states can attend Minnesota schools and receive resident tuition rates. The Office of Higher Education is also responsible for the registration of nonprofit private post-secondary institutions and the licensure of for-profit career schools. The Office of Higher Education also acts as a clearinghouse for data on higher education systems in Minnesota. So it has data on things like tuition, enrollment, and student aid programs.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question about reciprocity because I didn't know about Manitoba. I don't recall that one. Didn't we used to have Nebraska as part of this? Do you know, or is that just part of our conference now or something? Can you tell me what has been in here before and is no longer in here, if there was any?
Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chair and Representative Bernardi, I'm not familiar with the history of that in detail. I can follow up with you offline and give you some more history about other states that were previously included. I don't, to my knowledge, in recent years, I don't know if Nebraska was included. But
okay, thank you.
All right, continue.
Mr. Chair and members, there's a number of legislative policy changes that were enacted in the last biennium related to the Office of Higher Education. I would highlight four new programs that were created. First, there is a teacher shortage loan forgiveness program that provides loan forgiveness to teachers that are teaching in areas designated as shortage areas. There is the dual training competency grant program. That program allows employers to get, access grants to provide training for their employees and the competency standards that were established by the Department of Labor and Industry for certain occupations and sectors. There's also a spinal cord injury and traumatic brain injury research grant program that was established in 2015 that provides grants for research into treating those conditions. And there's also the occupational scholarship pilot program that Mr. Hopkins referenced that provides scholarships for students attending two-year schools and pursuing courses of study in high-demand occupations. This is a good moment, I think, for Mr. Savory to jump in with that number that Representative Schultz requested.
Mr. Savory?
Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz, in looking at the last spreadsheet for the 2015 legislative session, the program was appropriated $5 million in fiscal year 17, and then the base for that program in fiscal year 18 would be $3.4 million, and then the program would expire as a $0 budget base in fiscal year 19. So because of the two-year nature of the pilot program, that would have a base in the coming 18 year and then expire in fiscal year 19.
All right, Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, in 2015, the legislature also established a higher education attainment goal for the state of Minnesota. That goal states that 70% of Minnesotans ages 25 to 44 should hold post-secondary degrees or credentials or certificates by the year 20. I don't have it written down here. I believe it's 2025. I can follow up with that later. The Office of Higher Education also is tasked with working together with the state demographer to measure progress towards that attainment goal. In 2015, we also implemented some requirements that post-secondary institutions in Minnesota report data on incidents of campus sexual assault, and the Office of Higher Education is responsible for collecting and reporting that data and sort of organizing that data on a statewide basis. And lastly, in 2016, in the supplemental budget bill, we appropriated money for the Equity in Education and Job Connection program, and that program is a grant program intended to increase attendance, retention, completion, and job attainment among historically underrepresented groups in higher education. I also wanted to highlight that there's a number of mandated legislative reports that are due this legislative session. So on January 15th, there's a report due on the Intervention for College Attendance Program. There's also a report due for that Equity in Education and Job Connection grant program that I just described. On January 31st, there's a report due to the legislature on tuition reciprocity. On February 1st, there's reports due on the Student Loan Debtor Counseling Grant Program. the Greater Minnesota Internship Program Effectiveness Report. That's a report that will publish jointly with the Department of Revenue. And there will also be a report on the Dual Training Competency Grant Program that I just described. And in the middle of February, along with the February forecast, we'll receive updated state grant spending projections. And from there, I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Savory to talk about some of the legislative financing and budget issues.
Mr. Savory.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, the next handful of slides will be in reference to legislative financing. By that, I mean that there'll be some overview and high-level detail about what the committee has in terms of accounts, the amount of money that has been appropriated in the past, and various high-level trends as to how the state budget has adapted to decreased and increased higher education appropriations over the past 25 to 30 years. The first handful of slides is our high-level pie charts and bar charts of the higher education budget area for the last several years. The first slide is a bar chart that lays out appropriations going back all the way to the fiscal year 06. As you can see in fiscal years 11, 12, and 13, as we moved past the recession and the countercyclical nature of the legislature appropriations went down, and then gradually have gone up as the economy has improved. Moving on to the next pie chart, you'll see a kind of snapshot of the state general fund budget as a whole. And this snapshot was essentially taken after the legislature adjourned last session. And so what that means is that everything that is here now will change a little bit as we move through the November and February forecast. But as a starting point, this is a good way to kind of look at how where higher education is in terms of percentage devoted to it in the state budget. And just for your information, at this point it's 7.3% of the state budget right now. As contrast, the next slide looks at a pie chart of the same data, but this is from the 06-07 biennium.
Mr. Savory, can we just hold for a moment?
Sure.
Representative Schultz, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the highest it's been?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe it's in the 13% range, and I believe two slides from now I'll be able to show you a pie chart that has that. So just continuing on this slide, you'll see that the higher education at this point is at 8.8%. And then if you transition to the next slide, you'll see an older pie chart from the 88-89 biennium. And this is where if you look in the upper kind of center of the chart, kind of like around 1 o'clock on a clock, you'll see 13.4% for post-secondary education. The name is just different just because the legislature was organized in a different fashion back then. You'll see some of the names on the chart in this one don't really sync up to the ones on the other pie charts, but rest assured that all the pieces are in there just organized slightly differently. What's nice about higher ed is that it's not the accounts haven't changed drastically over the course of many years, so it's very comparable year to year.
Representative Albright has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, I'm just curious, and you may not have it now, but in terms of the student population relevant to back in 88-89 versus current, I'm just wondering if you have that data, and if not, you could pass it on to the committee. I think that would be appreciable in terms of the kind of the pro rata per capita budget versus student population.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, we can get some student enrollment data for you on a historical basis and forward that to the CA for distribution.
Representative Lean, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Savory, is there a significance for fiscal year 88-89? This is the second presentation I've seen that year in a committee today.
Sure. I believe I was trying to go back in 10-year increments, and prior to 88-89, it was difficult to pull up, I guess what I would call like viable PowerPoints, things of that nature from a historical basis. And this one seemed to be the one that best illustrates kind of where the budget was going in that sort of direction. There are other ones that I can dig up. I'm not sure kind of the increments going back, but this one seemed to be reliable in that regard.
Thank you.
All right. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess moving forward, we'll, now that we're done with the historical look, we'll just kind of look at where we are now and the accounts within the committee's jurisdiction. So as you can imagine, there are several accounts within the committee's jurisdiction. There are the higher institutions themselves, so the University of Minnesota system, Minnesota State System, or MINSCU, the Office of Higher Education, And then we also, the committee also has jurisdiction over appropriations to the Mayo Foundation. If you look at the pie chart, you'll see the percentage is broken up by percentage of where the essentially $3 billion within our accounts go to. I've split out the state grant program from Office of Higher Education just because it's such a large part of the budget. It's approximately $180 million per fiscal year that does go to the state grant program. But if you combine it with the Office of Higher Education, it represents about 15% of the overall higher education budget in Minnesota. From a historical perspective, there has been part of state statute that has essentially set the legislative intent around higher education funding.
We can just have you hold for a minute to Representative Albright.
Thank you. I see one less than 1% of the Mayo Foundation. Is that relevant to the medical school?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe the Mayo Foundation is relevant to various training programs for physicians. We can get you some more detailed information on that if you...
Thank you.
Mr. Savory?
To speak specifically about statute regarding legislative financing, it's in statute that the intent is to provide, the legislative intent to provide 67% of the combined revenue from tuition, the university fee at the University of Minnesota, state general fund appropriation, the public post-secondary institutions. Next, several slides will just be a legislative.
One question, Representative Bernardi.
Okay, I may have raised my hand prematurely, but are you going to show us on the next chart on where we're at with those, with that percentage? And do we have any accountability measures to make sure we meet that?
Mr. Chairman, members, from my understanding, this the way this policy is written, it's turned from a requirement to intent some years ago. I don't have the exact numbers on where we are now, but I can get those for you and I'll return those to the committee.
Okay, thank you.
Moving to the next slide, you'll see a bar, or essentially a grid regarding the fiscal overview for the 2015 session. These grids are relatively self-explanatory. They read similar to a spreadsheet that you would see in other committees. I won't offer too much commentary here, just to say that what's very helpful for me is to look at the percentage increases on a biennial basis. So looking at the two right-hand columns, you'll see the percentage increase for the various institutions as well as the Office of Higher Education. Just some session highlights for the various accounts within the budget area. I'll try not to go over ones that my colleagues have talked about already, just to give you more of the highlights. University of Minnesota received a total of $22.2 million to implement tuition relief in the 16-17 biennium. Additionally, as my colleagues talked to you, $15 million in each fiscal year was for investment to improve the University of Minnesota Medical School. Another additional $500,000 for the Alzheimer's research and dementia-related research, and then the 5% language for performance goals. Moving on to MinSCU, there was $50 million fiscal year to implement a partial tuition freeze within institutions for fiscal years 16 and 17 and each year thereafter. $450,000 in one-time funding to establish an ag teacher program. Annual funding of $175,000 to establish a Veterans to Ag program, and then the 5% performance goal appropriation, as my colleagues talked about. As far as the Office of Higher Education goes for the 2015 session, there was an increase of $7 million to the state grant program, funding for concurrent enrollment, annual funding for $500,000 for spinal cord research grants, and then annual funding to establish teacher shortage loan forgiveness program. Moving to the next slide, you'll see a smaller overview for the 2016 session. In total, during the last supplemental bill, there was $5 million in the 16-17 biennium devoted to higher education, and that number projected into the tails will be $4 million for the 2018-2019 biennium. Minnesota State received a $570,000 base increase to protect affordability for current and future students, $200,000 in one-time funding related to open textbooks, and then a $20,000 for transfer to the Cook County Higher Education Board. Additionally, the University of Minnesota received $800,000 for health training and restoration activities, for the Department of Family Medicine, Mobile Dental Clinic, and expansion of the geriatric education and family programs. And then $100,000, as my colleagues mentioned, in one-time funding for the collegiate recovery program at the University of Minnesota Rochester. Office of Higher Ed in 2016 received $500,000 in one-time funding for the Equity in Education and Job Connection Grant Program, $2 million one-time funding for the state grant program, and then $500,000 for the grant to the St. Paul Foundation for a web-based job and internship tool. Additionally, $100,000 was appropriated to the Ombudsman for Mental Health for monitoring drug trials at the University of Minnesota Department of Psychiatry. The next three slides I won't spend a lot of time on, but typically this committee will receive bonding overviews from its various agencies and accounts. These are just some helpful terminology to help you navigate some of the bonding terminology that gets put forth to the committee. One term that is helpful to know is HEPR, which is the Higher Education Asset Preservation and Replacement. Essentially, projects that are eligible for health and safety code compliance, compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, hazardous waste abatement, and air quality improvements. And those are usually awarded as sums to the various University of Minnesota or Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Additionally, bonding dollars within the budget area take place in kind of two ways. There are either general obligation bonds or revenue bonds. General obligation bonds are securities backed by the full faith and credit of the state, therefore meaning that the state will levy a property tax if it's unable to pay the debt service. Revenue bonds are different in that they're typically used for projects which have a revenue stream. So think about if there was a project related to a dormitory, has a revenue stream from students occupying that dormitory, or things like the self-loan program at Office of Higher Education are other good examples.
Representative Pawlowski has a
thank you, Mr.
question.
Chair. I'm going to go back to slide 32 for a second. And HEPR, since we didn't pass a bonding bill, could we alert the systems to tell us how they addressed HEPR without a bonding bill? And I'm particularly interested in how they tapped their reserves, either central office reserves or campus reserves, if there was a HEPR issue over the past year and a half. I don't need the information now, but when they do present, I would like to know, because I know we've had campuses who've had issues with either leaky roofs, with heating and ventilating, with asbestos, with handicap accessibility. That would have been a classic HEPR addressing. We did not have that, so I would like to know how those were addressed without having a bonding bill.
Good question. I'm just guessing that some maybe didn't do anything if it wasn't a critical thing, but others may have used some of that. So good question to ask.
Mr. Chair, I know that some had to do some things. When there's a leaky roof, we cannot let the roof leak. It has to be addressed or you're going to compound the situation with both internal either furniture or other items inside the building. So, and I'm saying it because I also want to take a look at the reserves. I would be very interested in how the reserves are being used without having a bonding bill and the size of those reserves, not just at the system level, but at the campus level. I'm not asking today, but for the future.
Right. Good point, and I'm sure people heard the question. I visited one campus where they actually have snow coming underneath the door, so that's a critical item to fix.
Well, Mr. Chair, we don't want any rain dripping in on either the instructor or the students, particularly with computers.
That's true. All right. Mr. Savory, back to you.
And, Mr. Chair and members, I'll pass it off to my colleague for finish the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Williams?
So I'm going to proceed just with a very high-level overview of some recent data and trends related to higher education. The first slide I'd like to show you is public four-year college enrollment. This shows public enrollment at the Minnesota State Universities and the University of Minnesota. I actually believe in your packout that the graph is mistitled where it says undergraduate enrollment. This is actually combined graduate and undergraduate enrollment. As you can see, enrollment peaked at the University of Minnesota in about 2011. That was the enrollment that year was 69,000, and dropped slightly to 1,651. And likewise, at the Minnesota State Universities, enrollment peaked in 2010 at 70,000 students, 70,085, and in 2015, they dropped to 66,524.
just for a moment, I have a question. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you guys present this as full-time equivalent student as well at some point in the future?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, I'm sure we could get that information for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to tag on to Representative Schultz, too, and if we could realize that information on a per-campus basis over the same intervals so that we can appreciate maybe some trend lines for the various campuses as opposed to the main line and where there might be deficiencies in terms of what we hear from the testifiers table.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, I think that the Office of Higher Education has very good data on some of those, the campus-level enrollment, and I'd be happy to provide you with some of that.
Okay, Representative Albright, are you done?
Thank you.
Representative Bernardi?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just wondering if you could do it in FYEs as well. I'm not familiar with the different ways they measure students, but I am familiar with the FYE measurement.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, for the committee's uses,
yeah,
the number
for full year. Oh, excuse me, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, yes, we can get you full year equivalent data. The data that we're presenting are for the fall headcount data, so it's just the number of students.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chair and members, looking along, so these are the public two-year college enrollment numbers. As you can see, enrollment at public two-year college, that's Minnesota State two-year colleges, peaked in 2010 at 138,000, and it's fallen to 122,664 since then. As you can see, two-year college enrollment is a little bit more sensitive to economic trends. There's a little bit more variation in the trend line. And likewise, Mr. Chair, private college enrollment at the nonprofits, those nonprofit colleges and universities in this graph mostly references schools like St. Kate's, McAllister, and Carleton. Although there is a couple of for-profit private colleges and universities. And as you can see, amongst the private colleges and universities, enrollment was a little bit more stable, similar to the four-year colleges and universities. But in comparison, the private career schools are a little bit more variable and sort of similar to the two-year schools. And so private career school enrollment peaked in 2009 with 37,033 students.
Thank you. Representative Bernardi.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I'm interested also in total student enrollment. I've seen trends over the years of people are taking less credits, taking longer to get through, but they are being persistent in their degree. They just have to be working, and they can't go full-time. So we have many more students than we actually have full-year equivalents. Is that, are you able to get us that data as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bardi, yes, we can get you full-year equivalent data. And the data we're presenting here is the headcount enrollments. So that's the total student enrollment.
Thank you.
For the Minnesota State numbers, the data I'm presenting do not include non-credit students. So this is a headcount of credit-seeking students in those campuses.
Thank you. Another question, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry for all these additional things, but could you also, when you present the full-time equivalent student per campus, could you guys go back to 2000 forward?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, I'd be happy to get as much in historical data as we can acquire.
Thank you.
You need somebody to write this down up there for you. Maybe you're doing it, but it's a long list. Okay. I guess that's all the questions for now. Go ahead. Return.
So proceeding on, the following chart shows you data on tuition reciprocity, the students entering and leaving Minnesota through the tuition reciprocity program. I want to highlight just two high-level trends here. So Minnesota and Wisconsin is the state in the tuition reciprocity program that has the highest number of students both arriving and departing. And sort of the second trend I wanted to highlight is that in all states, more Minnesota students are departing than entering. So the result of that is that Minnesota is paying the other states that has paid in this program, and funding for that, those payments are appropriated in the Office of Higher Education. Mr. Chair and members, this next chart shows the rate of tuition increases since 2000. And as you can see, these dollars are presented in inflation-adjusted terms. So for the University of Minnesota, In 2015 dollars, in the year 2000, tuition was $6,630, and in 2015, it's $13,840. Likewise, for Minnesota State Universities, it rose from $4,429 in 2015 dollars in the year 2000 to $8,049. And finally, for Minnesota State Colleges, it was $3,371 in the year 2000 in 2015 dollars, and it rose to $5,397 in 2015. The next graph shows you sources of financial aid for Minnesota students. So as you can see, there's pretty similar numbers of loans and grants and scholarships provided to Minnesota students. So about 49.5% of the total financial aid provided in the state is provided in loans, and 49.2% of the total financial aid is provided in grants. Within the category of loans, about 85% of lending is federal lending sources. So that's things like the Stafford Loan Program, the Perkins Loan Program, the PLUS Loan Program, and federal agency loans. About 2.7% of lending is the self-loan program administered by the Office of Higher Education. And about 11.5% of lending is private and other sources of lending.
We have another question. Representative Pryor?
I'm sorry, I'm kind of going backwards to we're just talking about students, trying to get students. And could we also get the context of,
the age of the students and basically what percentage of the population they represent? And to put that in, back into the historical context, back to 88, I think was one of the earliest that you had. Does that make sense to you? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm addressing you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pryor, are you asking for numbers related to the tuition reciprocity program?
No. Back to just the general and the state universities and the university. But when we were talking about enrollment in that context and not.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Pryor, you're asking for numbers about the historical data on financial aid?
No, in enrollment. And comparing it to
1988.
Yes, and it's the age of the students that were enrolled. Did you get information about that age group? Is it the traditional 18 to 22? Has how that's changed over time? And also, as a percentage of the population, the traditional cohort group of 18 to 22?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pryor, I'll do my best to pull that together.
All right, Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, returning to the financial aid graph, amongst grants and scholarships, you can see that the sources of those funds are different than for loans. So about 51.8% of grants and scholarships were provided by the institutions themselves in the forms of institutional aid or tuition discounts. About 14.6% of grants and scholarships were provided by the state. That's primarily the state grant program, but there's also some other state grant scholarship programs. And about 29% of the grants and scholarship dollars are provided by the federal government, primarily through the Pell program, but also through some other grant programs. Finally, work study represents about 1.2% of total financial aid sources in Minnesota. Mr. Chair and members, the last two graphs I'm going to present relate to student debt loads. So just to give you some background, this is based upon federal data. The federal government collects data from within federal lending programs using its records of the amount of federal lending taking place. I would say that the data is a little bit messy. The Federal Department of Education just released this data a couple of years ago, so I've been working to clean it up. But I would say that I'm pretty confident in the I'm not necessarily confident in the precise numbers here, but I think that the general trend and sort of the magnitude of the change is probably about right in these numbers. So these numbers are not inflation adjusted, but just for some context, the first chart shows you changes in federal debt loads among primarily certificate and associate degree granting schools. So for Minnesota State schools in 1998, the average debt upon graduation, or the median debt upon graduation for an average institution within that system was $2,650. In 2015, that's risen to $8,896. And amongst the for-profit, primarily certificate and associate degree-granting schools, the median debt for the average institution in the for-profit school category was $3,774 in 1998, and that's risen to $12,146 in 2015. And just for some context, these numbers are not inflation-adjusted. These are in nominal dollars, and so probably some of that growth is due to inflation, but that is still exceeding the rate of inflation in that time.
Your chart has a very clear trend there that we're disturbed by. But Representative Albright.
Thank you. And to the testifiers, whoever wants to answer this question, I'm going to go back to your slide number 40. And the title speaks to the rate of inflation, but yet you don't give me a comparator for inflation itself. So if you could provide that. And then in inflationary terms, what each one of those three entities would be if they just tracked with inflation. And secondarily to that, in your subtopic heading, you talk about tuition and fees. I'd like to understand in terms of the differentiation between the inflation that each one of those institutions has experienced with tuition, and then separately and distinctly the fee structure as well. So if you could parse those apart from one another so we can appreciate where the dynamics are really playing out.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, I'll do my best to follow up with that.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So slide 40, you've adjusted for inflation. Could you adjust slide 17, state funding for higher ed by inflation across those years? I'm assuming that those are not adjusted.
Mr. Chair, members, no, those are not adjusted. We can work to adjust those.
What do you guys use, a CPI or?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Williams, Schultz, for the tuition numbers, yes.
Okay, thank you.
So, Mr. Chair and members, the last chart is a similar chart showing the trend among four-year predominantly bachelor's degree granting institutions. So it shows a pretty similar trend amongst private nonprofit schools, the University of Minnesota system, Minnesota State system, and private for-profit schools, and all of them have seen pretty significant increases. And I think that I don't need to iterate the specific dollar amounts there, but if you'd like me to follow up with you offline, I'm happy to provide those. So, Mr. Chair and members, that concludes our presentation. Our contact information is here, and we'll try to follow up with some of the questions you've asked us so far in committee, but if you have anything else that you'd like for us to pull for you, other numbers, and any other questions related to higher education policy, we'd be happy to provide you with that.
All right, any final questions from members? Thank you, Mr. Savory, Williams, and the newest member, Nathan Hopkins. Paul, we do have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The debt slides, could you adjust those for inflation? I think they're nominal, so is that possible?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, they are nominal, and I can adjust it.
That would make the trend more clear.
So you have homework. We're about at the end of our time, but at least the agenda for the day. Again, I'd like to thank the three gentlemen for their presentations and the questions from the members. I'd like to also welcome again members here, both new and some of those returning. I look forward to many more interesting hearings. I just want to say one more thing, and that we do like to start right at 3 o'clock, if you can put it on your agenda so we can be here and get started. Eventually, we're going to really need the full time to conclude our business. So. It's just a suggestion. I think all chairs say the same thing, but we appreciate this is the Higher Education Committee. I expect higher
standard.
Well, you know how to set your watch. That's all. So, any questions of me or anything else that's on your minds? We again thank you for the presentation. It's a lot to absorb, even if we've been here a few times and heard it before. But, so, we have work to do. Look forward to your help and getting it done. So with that, we are